Thanks for tuning in to Men for the Win, a podcast hosted by David Kufis and Dan Thompson, two avid fans who appreciate well-played baseball, especially when it's done by the Twins. Men for the Win is sponsored by the Grand Group with Edina Realty. Are you looking to purchase a new home in the Twin Cities area? Or perhaps you're trying to sell your current home? Whether you're upsizing or downsizing, the Grand Group with Edina Realty will meet all of your housing needs. Contact the Grand Group by emailing thegrangroup@edinarealty.com or call them by phone at 612-817-8751. The Grand Group with Edina Realty, three-time Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine Super Agent Award winners.
On this episode, David and Dan recap the Twins' three-game series against the Cleveland Guardian. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Thanks for tuning in to Men for the Win. My name is David Kufis. With me, as always, is Dan Thompson. The Twins take 2 of 3 at home against the Cleveland Guardians. A great bounce back from the terrible showing against the Astros. Dan, the Indians, I don't know if you saw this.
Guardians. Oh, David, you did it already.
I've been so good about this. Anyway, the Guardians, Dan, they had almost no coaches for this entire series because they were all on the health and safety COVID list. And they still won a game, Dan. Not a bad showing for a team with no coaches.
I know. When Carl Willis was calling the shots, I thought, huh, okay, what's going on with the Guardians? Yeah, huge, though. Huge to win this game 3 and win this series, win the homestand. I think if they had lost this one and then it's a 4-5 homestand instead of a 5-4, I think that would have been wildly disappointing. And this, you know, rallies after getting swept by the Astros.
Well, especially after they had such a great run at home of just continually winning and then just kind of have that gut punch from the Astros series. It was definitely, yes, good to get a bounce back here.
And here's the thing. Now they play the A's, the Royals, the Tigers, the Royals, the Tigers. I mean, like, they should win all of those series. I don't think they will, but I think they should win each of those series and hopefully continue to grow this lead in the AL Central. It's up to 3 games right now.
And on top of that, I mean, the way that they're going to win these series, I think, is more guys coming back healthy, the better this team should perform.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that they won 2 of these 3 with, I don't know what we're going to call Buxton, a 2/3 of Buxton here, and then, you know, with 0% of Correa, and then great to see Arraez turn it around. I mean, a very hopeful series, actually, in a lot of aspects.
Well, with that, then, let's go ahead and jump into the series recap.
Series recap.
David, the Twins win this game 12-8. A little more of a heart palpitation, I think, than perhaps there should have been. But in the 9-run 5th, maybe the greatest inning that we've seen, certainly this season, right?
How often do you get to see that in the entirety of the season for most teams, Dan?
Maybe once. And the fact that it was almost all with 2 outs. You know, the Twins get a couple big home runs. They get a home run from Sanchez, finally. A 3-run blast in that inning. Lewis's grand slam. I know we're going to talk about that later. Buxton and Polanco. But it wasn't all just Bombas. I mean, they were moving runners just a little bit. They, you know, 3-for-9 with runners in scoring position. Only 5 guys left on base. Just a very complete offensive effort, obviously, when you score 12 runs.
Yes, I mean, defensively, not so hot. I mean, 2 errors, Duran and Lewis, and then obviously when we got to the bullpen after Gray had a pretty solid outing, not long enough. So it was his second outing back from the IL, 4.1 innings pitched. 4 hits, 2 runs, 4 walks, though, Dan Thompson, but 8 strikeouts. So Gray looked pretty good, but obviously you want to see him get deeper into the game. Then the bullpen comes in. Jax decides to make it interesting, giving up a whole bunch of runs. And then Smith, Duran, and Pagan finish out to close out the win.
Well, so we were texting during this game about your win rule that you would propose, where we just a committee just picks the winner after the game. And I don't know, I guess I would have had to give this to Joe Smith or Duran, or maybe just Sonny Gray, right? I think Sonny Gray should have earned the win here. He doesn't get it because he doesn't finish 5 innings.
No, first of all, Joe Smith definitely should have gotten the win in this game. If I was the scorekeeper in this game and I could institute my system, Dan, Joe Smith gets the win. But I got to be honest, Dan, every single outing that Joe Smith has, he deserves the win, I think, Dan.
He should be, what, 10-0 by now in your book?
He should be, absolutely, 100%.
He does have 6 holds, which is an impressive stat this early in the season. So yeah, the Twins win this one 12-8. They score right away, which was encouraging in the first inning just after the Houston debacle. And then they led the entire game. It was tied 2-2 going into the bottom of the 5th. But then the Guardians chipped away. They got 2 in the 6th, 2 in the 7th. Twins do had 1 in the 8th, but 2 more in the 9th. And they were just a swing away from being into this game at so many moments. But they left 9 guys on base, 2-for-10 with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, it was way more exciting than it definitely needed to be. But any other thoughts on game 1, Dan?
No, let's move to game 2, which I thought was a game of missed opportunities. And you were able to go to this one.
Yeah, I was. It was the first one with the kiddo for this year. Had a great time. We did have to leave in the top of the 10th inning, which, How frustrating, Dan. The one game that I'm taking my kid to so far this season, and it's the one game that goes into extra innings, and she made it the entire game.
That's impressive.
She did great. She danced. She ate food. She had ice cream out of a helmet. $9, by the way. $9 for ice cream out of a helmet, Dan Thompson? What are they doing over there?
You got to keep the helmet, though, right?
I did. Yes, I washed it out. Yep, I was one of those people who washed out the helmet and brought it home. I'm sure she'll love playing with it, Dan. 10 minutes at
some
point in her life.
Instead of that tinfoil hat, you could just put that on, right, when you want to have one of those conspiracy moments.
Every time I got one of those theories, yep, I'll put that hat on. But anyway, yeah, so many chances in this game. Twins go 2 for 10 with runners in scoring position, leave 12 guys on base, and it just felt like every hit that they got in this game was with 2 outs, mm-hmm. which is fine, but you still have to convert those runs. I know it's that much harder. They had that moment where the base is loaded, no outs, and Urshela hits into a double play, doesn't even score a run, Dan. It's just terrible.
Yeah, that was disappointing, because you figure in that spot, gosh, they're going to get one in. Again, because the Guardians were playing back. They were conceding the run, ironically, and it bounces back to the pitcher, and he throws home and throws the first. Great defensive play. I think that's not as easy of a play as it looks, given the pressures of that moment, but that would have been the difference, right? That would have been the winning run if the Twins had been able to get that one across.
Stupid extra inning rules. I don't think it would have really mattered too much, because Cotton got hit pretty hard as soon as he got on the mound in the 10th. But anyway, a couple of things I wanted to point out, though. Smeltzer making a spot start. I mean, we've said for a long time that we don't think he's going to be a guy who's going to make a lot of starts at the major league level. But I would think with Winder moving out of the long relief role into the starting rotation, Smeltzer is definitely a candidate for that long relief role.
You figure him and Griffin Jacks are kind of the two guys that they could use going forward. And again, if he can give him a 5-inning spot start, I mean, this was one of the best parts of the homestand.
Pretty surprising, actually. And I got to be honest, I was super disappointed when I'm looking at things before the game. Like, you know, I'm getting all ready.
You didn't
want
to see a Devin Smeltzer start that wasn't the first name?
No, I didn't know who I was expecting to get the start. But it wasn't Smeltzer. I guess his name wasn't on the tip of my tongue when I ended up at the stadium.
So the Twins, they tried, you know, 2 runs they give up in the top of the 10th. And then Emmanuel Clase comes in and shuts the door pretty hard on them. The Twins did have, you know, they got one run across, but it didn't have the sense they were going to hit Clase hard enough to score that second run.
It was quite frustrating, I guess, in my opinion. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but how the bullpen was handled at the end of this game. And I understand there's some reasons why it was handled this way. At the same time, I would have made different decisions.
Understandable. Let's go to game three, the rubber match. And the Twins win this one. Let's go on to game three. The Twins win the rubber match here, 3-1. They score right away, and a much more comfortable start out of Joe Ryan here, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, he definitely seemed to settle down, and we had talked about this a lot last episode, how he was going to bounce back after the rough outing against the Astros. 6 innings pitched in, only 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts. Not a bad outing for our boy Joe Ryan.
Not at all. And I thought, really, again, we will talk more about this, but the defense was on display. This was a game, if I had to pick one game this season that was really won by fielding in some sense, I think it's probably this one. There were multiple runs saved by the corner infielders, and that's really encouraging. We have not seen this from the Twins in a few years, I feel like, with the good defense they got out of this game.
There is something to be said about the connection between Urshela and Arraez. Because it seems like Arraez really has a good read on those throws coming from Urshela, even when they're very unbalanced and sort of unorthodox throws being required out of Urshela to make the plays.
Well, and you don't think of Arraez as being a natural first baseman, but he's played a very good first base, really. He's digging balls out, and it seems to be working. Which, go figure. Well, go figure. If I would have told you that... Nope.
There it is, Dan Thompson.
I'm not going to say that. All right. You go ahead, David. I've lost my credibility for this segment.
I think the only real knock about Arraez at first, and I used to not really think about this too much, but I do think he is a smaller target for guys to be throwing to. And so, like, if I had to say one positive about Miguel Sano, it's that he did offer a big target for guys to throw to at first base, Dan Thompson.
I mean, how much of a factor is that? Do you think the size of the first baseman?
Well, I think the height more than anything, less about like, I'm not actually talking like, oh, great, they have a big target to throw to. But I mean, Arraez's height has come into play 2 different times, I think. What's funny about it is both times that it's happened, it's been on a soft toss to first base after like an easy fielding play.
Right.
But it goes high. And so it's one of those things where that's the only negative about Arraez playing first base, I'd say, is if he could grow a couple inches somehow, that may help his cause.
You know, Kent Herbeck taught us a couple things about first base. One, if you're big, that's okay. And two, I think first baseman can really move. He could lumber that Kent Herbeck. He could lumber his way and make a lot of catches that Luis Arraez clearly could not.
Well, and Arraez in this game, he stole a base too. And I had even said that last episode that he seemed like he was being really aggressive on the base pass, which I loved. So it was fun to see that come to fruition this episode.
You know, he's going to be able to steal even more bases once they move that base, that second base, just a little bit farther forward, David. Just think of all those inches he's going to get back. Any other things on game three here?
But the only other play I want to talk about is Buxton Buxton's almost great catch in left center. Mm-hmm. So Buxton goes up and he seems fine, right? Like he came back and hit a home run. So he doesn't seem like he's injured, certainly. But he goes up to make the catch. It's going to be a spectacular grab. And not many guys in the majors could make it to the ball to even make it possible to make that catch.
Sure.
The thing is, though, Dan, what makes this so heartbreaking, it's kind of an error on Buxton as far as why he didn't catch it. He closed his glove too early. It was an odd play for a guy of Buxton's caliber. But you got to think all the things he's trying to keep in his mind.
Don't hit the ball. Don't run into the left fielder, whoever's out there that day. Don't dive. For a guy who plays... plays so naturally in center field,
yes,
right? And what the Twins have wanted to do is to basically have him not play so naturally.
Yes.
So I get that.
But yeah, it's just so funny that like the thing that he's probably expecting his body to do just automatically because he's trying to factor in all those other things just is the one thing that he didn't do to complete a pretty miraculous catch that it would have been.
Well, speaking of Buxton, let's move forward to Puckett's Picks.
Catch them all, Kirby Puckett!
Puckett's Picks winner.
You know, Buxton is a high-risk, high-reward pick, certainly. And unfortunately, Dan, you do get the reward this time around as you take the victory. Buxton had 12 points. The listeners took a rise, who I wanted to take, who had 7 points. I took Polanco, who you were kind of disappointed. You were thinking, maybe I should have taken Polanco last episode. And now here you are, though, Dan, standing tall with a Buxton victory.
You know, when he hit that second home run of the series in Game 3, that felt good in multiple ways, right? Because I knew I had it locked up at that point. Yeah, I mean, he only had to play 2 games, and he didn't have any negative points in Game 2 because he didn't even come in and pinch hit in any key moment. So something else we can talk about a little bit later.
Yeah, you're telling me we're going to talk about that later. But anyway, so season standings here. Dan and I are both tied at 4 wins apiece, and the listeners have 3 wins. However, the listeners still have not quite double Dan's points, more than double mine. It's kind of funny that I have 4 wins and I only have 24 points scored. But again, most of that is due to the negative points scored at the beginning of the season for the guys who I kept picking.
I was going to say, I think through the first 6 series, you were negative overall. So you really turned it around here, man.
All right, well, let's keep going here. Beast versus Bench.
Beast versus Bench.
Is losing fun?
You know, Buxton would have been a great choice here, but I went with Luis Arraez. He played in all the games. He was a presence on the base paths. Go figure. He was a presence in the field, and he got on base 3 times in Game 3. His average is up to .314. I just think he looks so good right now, and we thought he maybe was hurt earlier in the year. I don't think that's the case.
No, yeah, he definitely looks healthy, and again, we've said this time and time about Arraez, that the more at-bats he gets, the more comfortable he looks, and the more hits he's going to get, and that has definitely proven to be the case.
Who do you have?
Yeah, so I went with Urshela. I know that not every game that he played in this series was fantastic, including that double play that he hit into in Game 2 was really, really a heartbreaker. But Game 3, a couple of the plays that he made at third base, and he went 1-for-3 with that home run that turned out to be pretty important when it was all said and done. So I got to give it to Urshela.
I thought so too. Just, you know, he had kind of disappeared, it felt like, for a couple series, but he was crucial, obviously, especially in Game 3. What about who's on your bench, sir?
I debated a little bit. I am going to give it to Jax in this moment because it was frustrating that the Twins got up so big in Game 1, and then Jax came in. If they would have lost this game, Dan, I would have lost my friggin' mind, let me tell you. And so Jax, to even make it possible, that this game needed to be continued to be watched, right? Like, because you know me, I turn it off after the third inning.
Oh, obviously, anything. Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm going to give it to Jax. I think a terrible outing, 4 hits, 4 runs, all of them earned, 3 walks, just not a good performance from Jax. And as we just mentioned, if it looks like Smeltzer could be turned to as the long relief guy, that means Jax might be out of a job, Dan Thompson.
But he's 3-0. I mean, he's got those 3 wins, David, so.
Don't even,
clearly.
Honestly, how frustrating is that? Like, this is one of those games where this is just silly. The worst pitcher of the day gets the win, Dan Thompson.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that rule about having to go 5, I think really should be 4 nowadays. I think there's a big difference. Anyway, we've been down
this road
before.
Well, for the Twins, it should be like 2.
Well,
2 innings and you might get the win. My goodness. Who do you have on your bench there, Mr. Thompson?
I went with Miranda. He really only played 1 game, but he was 0-for-5 in it. That was Game 2. I just think he has kind of not blown a chance here in some sense to ensconce himself in this lineup, but he's clearly going to have to go back to AAA to get some more at-bats because right now there's not room for him really at either corner spot.
No, and if Correa comes back, I mean, the axe is going to start to fall here pretty quickly, I would think, Dan.
Well, let's move forward here to the next segment.
Rocco's Rewind.
We can actually talk about Rocco now, Dan.
He's back.
He's in the clubhouse. He's at the ballpark. He's eating gum like he always eats gum. He's talking like, you know.
Do you eat gum? I thought you chew gum. I don't think he eats.
No, he's eating it. I think he's eating it, Dan. He's swallowing it. I can tell. Have you seen how much that guy puts in his mouth at one time?
It's a lot. It's nuts. It's a
You're
big...
not telling me that a piece doesn't sneak through every now and again, Dan. You know it does. You know it does.
Well, so a couple things. First of all, Rocco did get ejected in game two for, I think, whispering a little too loudly to the umpire. So that was funny. But I'm going to go with this for my rewind. I think anytime they've gone to Joe Smith this season, sure looks like a good idea. And I know you're clapping. You're very proud of this. I know that you anointed him as, by the way, the oldest player on the team. Let's give him some credit here. He's gone, what, 12 and a third innings this year with no runs allowed. I mean, and again, it just it seems like he comes in and he's the cooler for the other team. He just shuts them down.
He comes in such big moments, it seems like. The guy has like six double plays turned behind him. He hasn't even let any inherited runners score, Dan.
Which,
that's
after last season, David, with so many inherited runners scoring, I mean, this is like, he's like the anti-Colome or the anti-Duffy. I mean, it was just like, it does show you that there is a little bit of randomness to that. Obviously not true randomness, right? But like, baseballs sometimes get hit hard at guys and sometimes they get hit softly where guys aren't. You know, like, it's just, there's that element too. But that's not what Joe Smith's doing. He's just getting guys to ground out into double plays, it seems like, every time he comes on.
Certainly seems that way, and I hope he can continue, because this is a guy who, Dan, this late in his career, he could get named to the All-Star game as a reliever at this rate.
That would be so cool. I hope he keeps it up. What do you have for your rewind?
So game two is super annoying for a couple of reasons. So number one, I know that Duran had pitched the last couple of games, but he only threw 12 pitches in the top of the ninth. I think you let him come back out for the top of the 10th in this one. I don't know. See if he can get the side in 10 pitches. Otherwise, pull him. Sure. But I just don't think that turning to Cotton in that moment when you have a chance to win the game is the right option.
Yeah, I think that that's true, because obviously the Twins would have the runner at second as well on the way back. You know they're going to be facing Class A. No, you can't allow more than one run in that spot, I don't think. And you got it. I think you're right. I think you let Duran try. If he doesn't work out, then you pull him, but give him a chance. That's a great call.
I would have felt better about that than Cotton giving up the run. Like, totally. Had Duran stayed in and he gave up a home run ball, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I would be, like, in a different universe, right? If we were having this podcast, maybe I'd be criticizing the decision to keep him in, but I don't think so. Let's move forward here, Dan. Minnesota moment.
Minnesota moment.
If I could pick kind of all of the pitching in game three, but I'm going to look at two specific things. So Joe Ryan's start, again, he gives them 7 innings when they desperately needed 7 innings. But Emilio Pagan coming in, so he had pitched game one and game two. And David, I get nervous. You know, we're Twins fans. Taylor Rogers, I think it's much, there's been plenty of attention thrown on the fact that Taylor Rogers is not good the second game in a row, right? On the back end of a back-to-backs. So Pagan, the guy he was traded for, is going his third game in a row. And I was super nervous. He's already had trouble with just a normal rest, right? But he looked good. He looked good here in closing this game out in a game the Twins really had to win. He did give up one runner, but I mean, he locked him down. He only threw 10 pitches, 8 strikes, just a much needed, pretty low stress save out of Emilio Pagan.
You think that he'll still be the guy that they're going to turn to now? But it looked like in game two, obviously, he got the 8th inning.
I think they're just going to go back and forth. And I think that that's good. I think, you know, you use Duran when you can, but when he's not available, Pagan's been doing okay. I mean, his ERA is actually pretty good. It's just everything's a little bit stressful, it seems like.
As opposed to Taylor Rogers' ERA, Dan, if we check in real quick, he's still got 13 saves on the season. He's only got 14 games in which he's appeared. And the one game that he appeared in, he didn't get a blown save. It was kind of a weird situation, but a 0.64 ERA for Taylor Rogers.
You know, good on him. I hope the Padres fans are just enjoying him. Right.
Well,
now,
at this point, that trade is looking like the worst one that the Twins made, because Paddock is on the 60-day IL. I mean, maybe Pagan works out. And I guess, like you said, this was a good performance by him, so maybe it'll be fine. But knowing that we don't have Paddock now, it's really like, looks like we traded Rogers for Pagan, which is not the trade that I think most Twins fans would make.
No, I'd agree with you. What's your moment?
Yeah, I think I got to go with Lewis's grand slam in game one. Super exciting moment. And you could see he was so pumped at the end of the game in his post-game interview. They were interviewing him on Bally Sports. Really seemed like a fun guy, down to earth. And a guy who wants to win, Dan. And you know how in like every interview with Byron Buxton, you kind of get that feel? Like, mm-hmm. I know that baseball players, they all want to win. Like, nobody likes to lose, right? But certain guys, they kind of have this thing about them where it's like, I really want to make sure that we're winning baseball games. And Lewis definitely gives off that vibe.
And one thing about it that I love too was Dick Bramer's call. You know, Dick Bramer's been calling these Twins games for, what, 30 years now, it feels like. He really captured the moment well, because this is such a significant moment for a guy who's dealt with multiple surgeries, hasn't been able to play a full season in a long time. And to see him also just playing good at short, I mean, just like, this is really encouraging to see a first round pick, a first overall pick, like Lewis is seemingly, he's going to work out for the Twins just really just fine.
Yeah, I think that'll lead into your question here, Dan, for Maurer's musings here. Let's keep moving.
I just don't know how it can get any better.
Maurer's musings.
Yeah, this is something we've kind of touched on, but I want to laser in on it. So what happens when Carlos Correa comes back, which is presumably this week, the bruise on his hand that must have been pretty dang awful to keep him out for as long as it has. So does Lewis move to third? What do they do here? Do they give him time at second and give Polanco some DH spots? I'm just curious, like, what do you think is going to happen with his at-bats?
I think that he moves to third. I said this last episode, and I think that's what needs to happen. Correa comes back, he plays it short, you move Lewis to third, and you sort of platoon him with Urshela, but use Lewis as a DH, I think, in the games that he's not in the field.
I think so, or I could even see them DHing. Well, Correa is a Gold Glove shortstop, so maybe you don't do that, but if they're worried about wear and tear on Correa, maybe he DHs for a bit, and then Lewis can play shortstop for a couple games.
Certainly could be the case.
Anyway, David, also, I think my children are upstairs screaming. I think they're so upset for the same reason that you're upset here, I think, in Maurer's musings.
Yeah, well, speaking of kids screaming, Dan.
Oh, man.
But seriously, when are the kid gloves going to come off for Buxton? Like, I understand that they want to be careful with him.
Maybe he should be wearing kids gloves when he's batting so he doesn't get, like, baseballs hitting him in the hand. That'd be good, right? Shouldn't it be, David?
Yeah, so he can't get Correa'd. That's what we call
there
that.
There you go.
But so here's my question. In game two, you're telling me there's not an opportunity for Buxton to come in? He played in center today, so he must have been healthy. He's just sitting on the bench. You're telling me there was no moment where Byron Buxton couldn't pinch hit and be more effective than Gilberto Celestino? You're telling me that he couldn't be more effective on the base paths than Luis Arraez? What are you talking about? What are you doing as a manager, Rocco? I understand you want to be careful with Buxton, but you can't just not play him, especially in situations where you have the opportunity to win games. What are you doing keeping a guy like Byron Buxton on the bench late innings? It's a tie game, a one-run game. Buxton is a game changer. Let him take one at bat. I don't care if his knee is swollen a little bit so you're resting him. Have him stand in the box and swing away. I'd rather see that than Celestino ground out to the pitcher.
Fans want an ejection. There it goes.
And that was Guardy's Gripe.
You okay there, David?
I'm fine. I was so annoyed at the stadium because I kept turning to my wife and my brother, and I'm like, what is going on here? Byron is certainly available for use. You got to give him an opportunity, even if he makes, again, a brief stint as a pinch runner. But honestly, you want his bat. Give him an opportunity to make a game-changing hit. My goodness.
All right, so I have a couple rebuttals to you, and I'm going to rebut you. So I think here, in reading what Rocco has said about this, is that when Buxton is not playing in a game, he's just off limits. He's just not available for that game. That's the approach that he's taking. I can see the quizzical look in your face. Your eyebrows are coming together. I get that. But that's what Rocco is saying, is that when they're going to rest Buxton, they're really going to rest Buxton. And he's like, he may as well just be hanging out, you know, in the training room, or he's playing Xbox or something in the back. But I do wonder, you're saying, I don't know that I believe that fully, David. I'm just saying that that's what's being said. But I will say this, is that Rocco saying that? Is that Buxton agreeing to that? Like what's going on behind the scenes between them for a conversation where at some point does Buxton just come out and basically just grab a bat and go into the on deck circle and take a swing when he's able to pitch it?
I'm saying there is no way that Byron Buxton is sitting in that dugout in a 1-1 or a 2-1 ball game and he doesn't want to be the one in the box.
I agree.
There's
with
no
you.
Way.
Yeah.
Unless he physically cannot. But I don't love this whole Byron behind glass break in case of emergency, and apparently a tie game in the 8th and 9th inning isn't an emergency. What's an emergency then? My goodness.
But then what if they put him on the injured list for 10 days? Then people are going to say, oh, well, Buxton can't play. I mean, like, I see what Rocco's trying to do. He's trying to balance him. And he's trying to do kind of like the Puckett's Picks thing, where, like, if you get two great games out of Buxton, like, is that better than three partials?
You need to be more upset about this. That's what I think about
this. I'm taking the long view. Remember last series, how I took the long view of the Houston series and it didn't blow out of proportion? I'm not going to blow this out of proportion right now. I'm not going to do it. You go ahead, Vesuvius, but I'm going to hold back here. I'm more like a Rainier, right? Like, I'm just holding it back and we'll see. I'll blow my top when it's good in time. But this is not the time.
All pretentious references aside, folks, I think that Byron Buxton should have come
Vesuvius
into this game.
Vesuvius is a well-known mountain. Rainier is a topical geographic when I'm out here in Washington, just because we don't have volcanoes in Minnesota to refer to, David. This is what I got.
Real quick, Dan, anytime somebody claims that you're being pretentious, you probably shouldn't use the word topical geographical volcanoes in Minnesota.
Well, what volcano would you rather I pick? You go ahead. Name me a volcano, David. Name me a volcano.
I don't know, Dan.
See, you just told me
there's none in Minnesota, so this is my fault, right? Isn't Hawaii? Hawaii is just one big volcano. That's what I understand.
Part of it, yes, too. Anyway, this is not a geography podcast, David, so let's move forward here to
our next segment. On this podcast. Dan, I get outside of the 694-494 loop and I'm lost. I would not be good on a geography podcast.
Highest point in Minnesota, David. Can you name it?
Eagle Mountain.
There you go. All right, you know some geography. All right.
Is that accurate?
That's correct. It's the highest point.
See? I don't know where that oh, came from. Man. I truly don't.
You should be running to the next segment now, David.
Dan starts quizzing me on eighth grade geography.
All right.
Okay, yes.
Series grades, here. David.
Series grades. We got to go. We got to move.
Series grades.
You're going to hate me again after this one, too. So I'm going to let you go first here since you seem to have the right grade.
No. The thing is, you don't even give me an opportunity to criticize. You assume I'm going to criticize. I'm not even going to come at you that hard in this particular instance. I'm giving them a C+. They won the series. I'm glad that they won the series. Good to see the offense come alive in game one. Just really frustrating they couldn't put it together in game two when the series sweep was definitely within their grasp.
B+. They did this again all without Correa, so I have to give that bump. If I'm going to give that bump in the Houston series,
and without
I'm going to give it here.
And without Sano, don't forget.
You know, he only needs 40 more home runs this season, David, to hit my prediction. So I'm going to go with the B+. I think especially they ended on such a great start from Joe Ryan, and to beat a rival here when they had to. I think that they really had to win this series as much as any May series can to keep the Guardians a little bit at bay here. Can we move to what I've been wanting to talk about for the last couple hours now since it happened?
I'm quite frustrated. Well, not frustrated. I just don't really want to talk about this, but yes, let's keep going.
I don't know, Jack. It looked like Herbeck pulled him off the bag.
Herbie's headlines.
How about you introduce it here, David, and then
I'll fill in the gaps here.
Oh, okay, man.
Well, here's how I'm going to introduce it. Folks, if you're new to the show, Dan Thompson has a contention that no-hitters ought not be celebrated. And it doesn't matter that a pitcher throws a no-hitter. That shouldn't be celebrated. We shouldn't even recognize it. It shouldn't be on ESPN as a headline. So now Dan, I'm sure, will claim what took place today for the Reds will be used forever as his evidence why no-hitters should not be celebrated. Okay, Dan, go ahead. Bask in the sun. Tell everybody what happened and why you're just a genius for your views on no hitters.
And it was so perfect because I didn't know what I was going to pick for Herbie's headline today. And then I literally opened up MLB and this was the first thing that came up. So I don't, David, first of all, the Pirates beat the Reds. They're already having a bad season. And the Reds have 9 wins on the year. I think like Griffin Jacks has as many out of the bullpen, seemingly, for the Twins. And the Reds lose 1-0. They don't give up a hit. They do have 6 walks, which obviously is too many here. But you know what? The Reds would have won this game if what had happened, David? If there had been a perfect game. And then that would be worth celebrating here. But the Reds, gosh darn, poor guys. So yes, Pirates don't have a hit, but they do score 1 run because of 3 straight walks and a fielder's choice in the 8th inning. And the Pirates then get their 1-0 win. Isn't that great? What a pitcher's duel. Shouldn't we celebrate the Pittsburgh start just as much as anything?
Just so people understand what's happened here. Dan's job of describing this sort of buried exactly what took place. The Reds threw a no-hitter, but they still lost. That's the moral of the story. So Dan is, again, using this as forever evidence that no-hitters don't matter.
But here's the thing. Pittsburgh's pitchers gave up the same number of base runners, 4 hits and 2 walks. So again, we should be celebrating the Pittsburgh start here. We should celebrate that, David. Celebrate that.
Enough. All right. Let's keep moving here. We're done with this. You got your moment. You had your moment, Dan. I will argue you didn't seize it as strongly as you should have. But anyway, let's keep pushing here. Puckett's picks for the upcoming A's series.
And we'll see you
Puckett's picks.
Oof. All right. Well, so the listeners are going to go first here. They took Polanco, who I'm sure you would have taken. And you go ahead. Who are you going to take?
I think I probably would have taken a rise had I had first choice, and I'm going to take a rise now, Dan Thompson.
You're going to take a rise now? What are you doing? You're a fool. I'm going to take Buxton again, and I'll keep him. 2-for-3 is pretty great.
I'm too upset that he didn't play in game 2 enough, Dan. That's the problem for me.
Well, David, I'm so glad I get to have Buxton again. Looking forward to extending my lead here on the season.
You don't have a lead. We're tied at 4. What are you talking about?
Well, it feels like I have a lead because I have more points than you. So okay. I'm riding high. I'm riding so high, I'm going to just take us out here, David.
Thank you. Please do.
Well, folks, if you like what you hear, please tell a friend. You can follow us on Twitter at Men for the Win. You can find our Men for the Win Facebook page. You can also check us out on YouTube there. In any of these places, please subscribe to the podcast so you're notified when new episodes are available. Give us a rating, give us a like, whatever they ask for. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, go Twins.
That'll wrap up another episode of Men for the Win, a podcast hosted by David Kufis and Dan Thompson, two avid fans who appreciate well-played baseball, especially when it's done by the Twins. Thanks so much for listening, and as always, go Twins!